This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon Eastern. Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on 360, wherever you get your podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. Still to come, top of the hour, John Bartlett from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. We'll get into Game 3, Winnipeg Jets facing off against the Colorado Avalanche. Game 1, the questions revolved around Georgiev. Game 2, they revolve around Connor Hellebuck. We'll see what the story comes tonight. 4 games on the go around the NHL. 3 Canadian teams in action, including the Edmonton Oilers, who are even with the Los Angeles Kings, and the venue shifts to California. I swear we're going to make this happen. Watch this. Jason Greger finally makes it happen from Sports 1440 in Edmonton. Joins me now. We've had 2 false starts this week. Jason, thanks so much for hopping on, pal, and being patient with us this week.
Oh, hey, man, no problem. My apologies for the rookie mistake of not turning my phone back on. Because, you know, you don't like to get fined in the pressers of having your ringer on, so I always shut it off, and then I forgot to turn it back on.
Trust me, that sounds like my dating life, people turning their ringers off when I call. Don't worry, it brought back dark memories nonetheless. Now, we were going to have you on yesterday, and we got the news about Bob Cole. I do want to get your thoughts on what, you know, your thoughts on his passing. Your thoughts on what maybe Bob Cole meant to you, voice of maybe your generation, the games that you watched. When you found out the news yesterday, we'll get to the Oilers here, but when you found out the news yesterday, what went through your mind?
Well, right away, the first thing was, I was like, man, I was pretty lucky I got to meet Bob and had many conversations with him over the years on my show. And, you know, because when I was a younger guy listening to him on TV, it wasn't really something I ever thought, like, hey, I'm going to meet Bob Cole. So that was kind of the first thing. And just, you know, how, as much as he loved hockey, the conversations I had with Bob, he was such a family guy. And I think that's always important. Sometimes it gets overlooked a little bit, but his ability, what I always found is, and I've done a lot of play by play, but what I found what stood out for Bob was his ability to tell the story and paint the picture for you. And people were watching it, so he would just add to it. But he did it with such minimal words that were so powerful and really good at the moment, right? Like he would say Marchand, and then he would just extend his name and say nothing else because you saw that he scored. And that was, I know it seems easy, but not a lot of people do it. Sometimes, you get caught up in wanting to say too much. And I thought one of his best skills was he didn't say too much. He let the moment live a lot. And I think the one guy today, Kevin Harlan's kind of the same. He's probably one of my favorite guys I watch now, and he does it in a similar fashion.
You know, I, like many, I went back yesterday after getting home from work and went through old Bob Cole clips, you know, even the radio clip from 72. Foster was doing TV. Bob was doing radio for CBC. His call, with all due respect to the late Foster, his call was better. It just was. I don't think the Foster call of the Henderson goal was that spectacular. It's iconic. Well, we're all, you know, we're going to hear it for the rest of our lives, but Bob's call was better. But the one that I kept coming back to, and Mario Lemieux against the North Stars in 91, Wilkinson and Sean Chambers, and that's a wonderful call. And he ends it up, he finishes it off with a Oh Baby, which is always his signature. But you remember 2014 and Marty St. Louis with the New York Rangers, and his mother passes away during the playoffs, and it's super emotional, and he scores the first goal of the game. And our hearts are all heavy for Marty St. Louis, and the line that Bob delivers, like to your point about minimalism and not letting the words get in the way of the emotion of the event, Bob just says, you have come through big time. It's just the whole moment of his mom's passing, everyone, empathy, grace, tragedy, all of it, you know, scoring a huge, like all of it, all in 6 words, Jason. Like, yeah. Bob never let the language, he was a master of language, right? Like we used to say about Winston Churchill, you know, he militarized the English language and sent it into battle. Bob was kind of the same way, but in a minimalistic kind of way. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Like, and the thing that was so great about Bob was because a lot of his games were national. And so if you're a fan of the Flames or the Canucks or, you know, the Maple Leafs, the Oilers of different generations, you probably have a memory of him that really resonates with your team, right? Like Flames fans, you know, the Lanny McDonald call in 89. And, you know, for Oilers fans, when there's like, hey, there's a new kid on the block, right? And then, you know, the Curtis Joseph save. And, you go through so many different ones. And I think that's what allowed him to resonate with so many people is because he called a lot of the most important goals, not only for your team, but obviously, you know, Joey Sakic,
yes,
right, in the Olympics. So, he's had a lot of great ones.
Yeah, I can't help but thinking, too, one final closing thought here on Bob before I move along. How lucky an entire generation of hockey players from 1973, when Bob transitioned to television in 2019, when he wrapped it up, how many players were lucky enough to have their great moments called by the greatest of all time?
Well, and I don't know if you saw it. Yes, there was guys like even Bob Cole when he called fights, and you had fighters talking about just how he would call their fight in such a, you know, an iconic way. I think it was Darren Lang and put it out there. And that's something you kind of, you know what? It doesn't matter if you're scoring a goal or a big hit or even a fight. Bob could call it in a way that made you as a player. Like, the fans loved it, but the players really appreciated it as well.
Yeah, they really did. Okay, to game three tonight. First of all, if you would have told me that the Los Angeles Kings were going to get a split after losing game one, I would have said, was the score 1-0 or 2-1? What did we see in game two? Because I'll tell you, I did not expect that.
Yeah, it was very different. And I think, you know, it's funny. If you look at this series overall, and I kind of call it a three-year series, right?
Yeah.
Because they played 3 years in a row. Edmonton will blow out L.A., and they've done it quite often. Mm-hmm. L.A.'s wins, four of their wins have come in overtime. That's the one area they dominate the Oilers. The Oilers have only won once in overtime in the five games. And their games are closer. When Edmonton wins, they're kind of blowouts. And so Edmonton, their best players weren't their best players in that game,
yep,
right? Their top three lines didn't do very much. You know, the Kane-McLeod line was the best of them. Mm-hmm. You know, McDavid's line, after dominating game one, was ultra quiet. Adam Henrique had the only shot 5-on-5 between that threesome in the entire game.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that's going to happen again. So, you know, they'll have to be better. You know, Stuart Skinner, there's some goals. Now, L.A. scored some odd goals in this series, right? But, you know, good to be lucky, lucky to be good. And I thought L.A. would be better, but I agree with you, Jeff. I thought, okay, L.A. is going to try to limit it. But Edmonton can score on L.A. And so I think L.A. might, whether they like it or not, they might have to play a little bit more run and gun if they want to win this series. Because I just don't think
that's dangerous.
I don't think they can slow down Edmonton. They haven't really shown it at any point. If you look, like, Edmonton scored 8 goals, 7 goals, 6. Like, in the 15 games, Edmonton has scored 4 or more goals 12 times.
See, I look at that and say, man, that is playing with fire. If you want to just play, like, last shot wins with the Edmonton Oilers. You know, I can tell the story the other day. Doug McLean, when he ran the Florida Panthers, whenever the Pittsburgh Penguins came to town, he would tell the Zamboni driver to dump extra water on the ice and just turn into a big slushy and try to slow down the Pittsburgh Penguins. Common wisdom is, if you want to beat the Oilers, if you're the Los Angeles Kings, don't you need to just, like, whether it's, you know, hooking and holding or maybe casual / skating picks in the offensive zone? I would think the strategy for Hiller would be, we got to slow these guys down, specifically in the neutral and offensive zone.
Well, I think in theory, yes. I'm not sure that they can. Right? Like, Deneau's line, it gets the McDavid matchup. But in game one, McDavid dominated. Game two, though, Deneau did way better, as I just outlined, only the one shot. So we know they'll get that matchup. But, like, Adrian Kempe is the one guy the Oilers can't slow down. He's got 10 goals in this 3-year series. And, you know, he scores key goals. And that, to me, like, Quinton Byfield has been the one guy, when he's on the ice in this series, he's dominated. When he's on the ice, the Kings have outscored the Oilers 6-0. Right? Like, four of those goals came with Kopitar and Kempe, and the other ones came when he was with Dubois and Fiala. And when he's not with them, and he's kind of split evenly, Jeff. Like, he's played 13 minutes kind of with each line, or two, you know, with a center and a winger. So it's funny that Quinton Byfield, I know he only has the 3 points, but his impact has been huge so far in this series. He's a massive body, and I think that's a matchup. If you're LA, you might say, you know what, guys?
Yeah.
Even though we don't want to, because they haven't shown that their 1-3-1 can slow down Edmonton consistently. Like, Edmonton isn't beating them winning 3-2. When Edmonton wins, they're scoring 4-plus goals.
Yeah.
Right? So I think they might have to do it. It sounds odd, but I think that might be their only way to beat them, is they say, you know what? We're going to try to win 5-4.
Scary thing about Byfield, too, I'm glad you got us there to 55, is he's not even playing his natural position yet. Like, he's a center. Like, and good luck finding, you know, a room at the inn right now at the Los Angeles Kings to play center, but he's a natural center, and eventually he's going to be a center with the Los Angeles Kings. Now, on that overtime winner, I'm of the belief that that was deliberate, not accidental, by Quentin Byfield. He knew exactly what he was doing, getting that to Anze Kopitar. Do you think it was deliberate or just a fluke?
Well, I talked to him about it. And, well, first of all, Mikey Anderson said it was a terrible pass, right? Like, that play, if you watch it, we've seen the play all the time, right?
Sure.
You come out of your zone, the guy stands at center, and he just deflects it into the zone. But that puck was, like, you know, in his midriff almost.
Yeah.
It was, and the fact that Byfield was able to get a stick on it just shows his great hand-eye coordination. And the fact that with one stick on it in midair, you deflect it perfectly to Kopitar. Now, all three of them even said, that was, you know what, it was a design play that wasn't executed very well on the initial pass, but then it worked out perfectly, right? So, no, I don't, like, Byfield definitely, he saw the puck and he reacted to it, but I don't think you can purposely put that pass perfectly on a guy's tape when you receive it out of midair. Like, it was, honestly, because I watched, I'm like, how did that puck go from there to there?
I
had to slow it down at home to see it, and then you talk to them afterwards. And Anderson, to his credit, was like, oh, God, it was a terrible pass. Sorry. It's like, you know, I can't make that pass, but it obviously worked.
How much is a Skinner conversation getting oxygen in Edmonton?
Well, they're concerned about it because if you look at the numbers, like, if you just go on the basics, save percentage, it's not good, right? Like, last year, he was a rookie. First-year guys in the NHL, I think people, he couldn't handle the pressure. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we go through the list of guys. Go through Connor McDavid and look at his first year in the playoffs. For him, was kind of meh, like 9 points in 16 games. For Connor McDavid, after he scored 100 points, right? Like, the playoffs are a different animal for every position. And you open talking about Connor Hellebuyck. The Vezina Trophy winner has given up 10 goals in two games, right?
Yep.
So Skinner's given up 9. And four or five of them have been like, you know, two went in off his skates. You know, CeCe breaks his stick and the Kings have a 2-on-0. Like, I don't really blame the goalie, right? So I do think Skinner, though, the Kempe shot and the Doughty breakaway, although we can talk, like, how does Drew Doughty, a defenseman, get a breakaway, right? 10 seconds after you score a goal. Like, that should never happen. That's not on Skinner. That's on the team. So I do think Skinner, there's concern. I think it's fair to say, okay, what if it continues?
Mm-hmm.
But I still look and say, and that's why I think LA's best chance is to try to win run and gun, because they can't slow Edmonton down, and they might say, hey, Skinner isn't, you know, Bobrovsky, right? He's not Vasilevsky. So maybe we can light him up. That's going to be the challenge for sure. And, you know, Skinner this year has bounced back after, you know, outings that he didn't like.
Yeah.
And so I'll kind of see what he does today. But, it's definitely a small concern.
If you're right and the Los Angeles Kings want to go run and gun with the Edmonton Oilers, that's fantastic. And we'll all think back to the Gretzky and Jimmy Carson and these days of these two teams, you know, scoring 12 goals a night. That becomes automatic must-see TV. Like, I'll take that all day long. If the Kings just want to trade chances with the Oilers, A, I don't like their chances. But, B, man, that becomes the most watchable series in the playoffs.
Yeah, like, I'll be honest, Jeff, I'm not sure they want to do it, but I'm not sure they have any choice if they want to win, right? They've tried to win defensive hockey. It hasn't worked, right? So you can – what's the old saying, right? The definition of insanity is to do the same thing and expect different results. So that – and if you look at the – there's only the one game they won 4-0. Every other game they've won 4-3, 5-4, 5-4, 4-3. Like, they don't win the low-scoring games. It's actually Edmonton who won Game 7 2-0, right? So I honestly, I don't think they have any other choice. And it might not be that they're necessarily playing that way, but Adrian Kempe, he can score. Like, he's a one-shot shooter. And, you know, I think they'll look and say, Edmonton's forte, although it improved a lot, if you look at Edmonton, what's the one area that you think, hey, if there's a weakness on their team, it's their defending, right? It's not their offense. Mm-hmm. It's their defending. So maybe we got to look at our matchup and say the only way to beat them is if we outscore them.
Let me close.
It's hard, but maybe that's the way they do it.
Let me close with this, Jason. The most impressive thing that I've seen so far, early as it may be in the playoffs, is what Vegas is doing to Dallas. What is the most impressive thing that you've seen so far? What's really turned your head?
Well, the Panthers being up 3-0. I picked them to win the series. I didn't think they'd be up 3-0. So that would be it. Vegas too. Although, like, how do you win Game 1 with 15 shots? I still don't understand.
I know.
Like Jake Oettinger, for all that he was good in the final month of the year, he just went back to the first 5 months of the year in that first game. And it's hard in the playoffs when you give away one game, right? So now let's say Dallas wins three more games and it's an even series. But the one, like, they gave away game one. And that's going to be hard for them to come back on. And Vegas, and the villain of Vegas just grows. And sometimes it's good in sports to have a villain, and there's no doubt that they are the villain.
The thing about this Vegas-Dallas series, that game two, you know, we always talk about, you know, loud, raucous buildings. And, you know, there was that, you know, after, you know, Aho scores to tie it against the Islanders, and then Martinuk scores 9 seconds later, the roof came off the building, and it's, like, super loud. To me, the biggest story of sound in the playoffs so far is just how quiet game two was between Vegas and Dallas. I was saying to Elliot on the podcast, when you can hear, like, when you're the home team and you can hear passes being made, when you can hear pucks on the blade, you know that the road team has done their job. They've done their work, and that was game two.
Yeah, and that's a sign to me where your fans, you can't wait for the big screen to tell you to cheer. Yeah. You got to understand this. We got to get going here. We got to do something to try to liven things up in the building. And I'll say this, not to be Canada versus U.S., but Canadian teams, especially in Vancouver and Winnipeg and, you know, Calgary, I know that Joe Bowen isn't loving the Toronto fans right now. He probably has a point. But, you know, usually in Canada, if your team's down, they'll try to do something, you know, organically to get going. And, you know, if you don't do that in the playoffs, man, like, that's what home ice advantage is supposed to be an advantage. And part of it's the fans. I think it makes a big difference.
It sure does. Look at those Winnipeg fans, the most creative in the NHL. Bud, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Much appreciated. Glad we could finally make it work.
You betcha, Jeff. Anytime, man. Have a great one. Enjoy the playoffs.
There he is, Jason Greger from the Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. We look forward to having him on later. Maybe the Oilers get past the Los Angeles Kings here. We can have Greger back on the program to talk about all things Oilers. That guy's got the wrap down. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. Matt Marchese, what you thinking?
We're looking ahead to tomorrow night. It's the aforementioned Stars at Golden Knights. Puck line is Golden Knights -1.5. So we have some new lines.
Okay.
At Dallas practice today.
What do you got? Hit me.
Robertson, Hintz, Johnston.
Okay, hang on.
Yes.
They've done that before. Mm-hmm. This isn't the first time that they've swapped out Pavelski and Wyatt Johnston. So they've done this. I'm always convinced that coaches will do this at various times during the year just for this such occasion where, okay, if we need to shuffle, these two might need to be able to play with Wyatt Johnston. This is something that you do in, like, February that shows up now in late April. Anyhow.
Break glass in case of emergency time.
It's what it feels like, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like that already for Dallas?
Yeah. And then we have Ben Duchesne Stankoven.
Yeah.
Dadonov, Pavelski, at no Seguin on the ice, but it seems like he's going to be the one that slots in there.
Yeah.
And then Delandria, Steele, and Smith is your fourth
Where's
line.
Where's Maverick Bork?
Not there
they
yet.
They called him up. Are they at that level of, in case of emergency, break glass?
Well, at this point, again, doesn't it feel like you're on the road? Like, you're not going down 2-0 and then going home.
Nope.
You got to go to a very hostile environment, which was pretty interesting to see that was in the NHL player pool.
Oh, yeah.
The toughest rink to play in for a visitor, which is, you know, non-traditional hockey market. We're still waiting on an update on Nick Hague. And I guess the biggest question is Dallas going to be able to score? They have 4 goals through the first 2 games.
Yeah, it hasn't been good. But that's the thing about the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, we've been saying this about the teams that have won the Stanley Cup of recent note, whether it's the Vegas Golden Knights, whether it's the Tampa Bay Lightning, whether it's the St. Louis Blues. Take your pick. Colorado. They all defend. And maybe the best of the bunch, Vegas. Nobody defends like Vegas does. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. The Vegas and Dallas is tomorrow. 4 games on the go around the NHL tonight. And we'll see the Winnipeg Jets face off against the Colorado Avalanche. Calling it, John Bartlett from the NHL and Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Thoughts on Bob Cole. Thoughts on this series. The show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome to 4 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Stanley Cup playoffs continue. New York Rangers, Washington Capitals. That one on Sportsnet 360. That starts at 7 o'clock Eastern. The Vancouver Canucks face off against the Preds 30 minutes later. Watch that one on Sportsnet. You can see the Oilers and the Kings at 10:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. And on CBC, you can watch the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. And with that, we bring in the great John Bartlett from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, former Aurora Tiger netminder. Yes, John Bartlett. Maddie and I talked about that to kick off the show today.
Yeah, well, Don Moore was my teammate for that 1 year. So I always say it was his rookie year before he went to Harvard. So I always joke with Don, all those goals I let in practice, they put me in the booth and you on the ice in the NHL. So there you go. Shout out for my boy Dom.
Dominic Moore, I can't think of, and I think the answer might be like three or something. How many times was he traded for a second-round pick? Remember, like, every year at deadline, it was, and a second for Dom Moore. Like, the minute he was traded to a team, it's like, okay, so they're getting a second-round pick at deadline.
Yeah. You know, he was a great talent, though, like, and a great kid, young back then, too. Well, we all were, I guess. But, great guy, great to play with. It was so awesome to see him go on and do what he did, at Harvard and then in his NHL career. And now he's even got a little time in the broadcast booth as well.
My kids, when they first started playing competitive hockey, went to his hockey school for a number of years, Ivy Hockey, which was run by the Moore family in Markham. Oh, it was great. And Maddie does say, by the way, it was three times he was traded for a second round pick. Yeah, I defy you to find someone else who was traded for a second round pick more than Dominic Moore.
Yeah, no kidding. Even in this series, though, Sean Walker, former Newmarket Hurricane. So you gotta throw that in too.
Here come the Keswick references in a couple of moments here. Here we go. Then we're going to dovetail and talk about York Simcoe Express. We're also Quinton Byfield played and Connor McDavid as the audience goes, will you please talk about something new? Listen, before we get to Winnipeg and Colorado, I know you're a huge fan. I've known you for a number of years of Bob Cole. Bob, as we all know, passed away at the age of 90 recently. Any thoughts, any stories, interactions when I say the name Bob Cole?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at Bob Cole, I mean, that's the standard, right? Coley was, it was such a special treat to be able to work. I mean, obviously doing the same job, we don't work alongside each other in the same game, but to be able to work with him over his last couple of seasons was a treat to now not only, you know, you heard the stories, but to witness a few up close and get a chance to talk to him and share some of the philosophies on the game and, and his approach. You know, there's nobody better than Bob Cole. And Bob's greatest thing, and he would always talk about it, was the ability to, make the players and the game and the fans the star. Because that's what it is. You know, we're all here for the players and the fans, and so good at conveying that energy and that excitement of what was going on in the game to the viewer, even the listener back in his radio days. And, it's been great to hear all the stories and everything come out again in the last 24 hours for Bob. So, you know what? I'll be completely honest with you, Jeffy. We're getting ready for a big game three playoff game tonight. And there's a little bit of melancholy involved when you think about that. It's Hockey Night in Canada tonight. This is the kind of games Bob loved. So, there's, as I said, a little melancholy and thinking of him and, how he would be ready for a big game with a Canadian team tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs and Hockey Night in Canada. So we're certainly thinking of him and all his family and everyone in Newfoundland.
You know, when anyone starts in this industry, generally you start by trying to emulate someone else. It takes a long time. You know, Miles Davis, the famous trumpeter, always say it takes a long time till you find out what you actually sound like. When you first started, was it Bob?
I think for the amount that we would have watched them, right? It was Bob for sure. It was Bob. And in that era, when I would have first started, and you have to remember the other thing too is back in, you know, when you go back 20, 30 years, Hockey Night in Canada was one game. So not like we have now where there's multiple games on in a night. So Bob was always the one voice, or you'd have, Dick Irvin if it was two games and the network was split. And so you'd have Dick and then a little, further back, Danny Gallivan as well. So depending on the region you were in, those are the voices you heard. But then through the playoffs. So It wasn't the same as it is now, where there's more of us because more games are broadcast and all teams have every game on television and such as well. So there was more of a sort of a specific tune in for those nights. So Bob certainly was somebody that you would look to and you know, I don't want to say emulate. I know what you're getting at. That's the challenge, right? You know, the biggest thing in broadcasting is, as you said, finding your own voice and being yourself. But you certainly look up to people and you look up to, you know, who sets the standard. And Bob Cole would have been that person for sure. So, I think that's fair to say.
Okay, Bart's level with me here. Are you going to sneak in a no baby tonight?
You know, I honestly haven't thought about that yet. Yeah, we'll see. If it happens, it happens. You know. One thing I'll tell you. Here we go. I'll give you a little. So Coley would say, you know, if you'd ask Coley, should be a good game tonight. He'd say, you don't know. You don't know. You never know. That's why they play the game. You don't know what's going to happen. So, and am I going to say, I don't know. We'll see what happens. You never know. What kind of a game we get tonight. So,
I just love it. I just love it. I think that's great. Okay, let me add the Jets and the Avs here. So pretty much, and I'll just be blunt, the first two games have been all about the goalie story. Game one was Alexander Georgiev. Game two, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but there it is, Connor Hellebuck, who's most likely going to win the Vezina Trophy. You're an old goaltender yourself. How do you look at these two goalies right now?
Yeah, well, you know, the story, you're right. The story in game one was Alexander Georgiev and seven goals. And I said, what about the six that the Jets gave up? Are we pretending that didn't happen? You know,
but it felt different.
So sure enough,
it felt. Didn't it feel different? Like, I know Hellebuck surrendered. Was it three in the first and three in the third? But it didn't feel like he was getting caved in. I know, like, your point is the right one. It's only one goal differential, only one puck. But it felt like, you know, the walls were caving in on Georgiev, but not so on Hellebuck. And I don't know why.
Well, two things I look at over the first two games of this series when you talk about that side of the story. First of all, throughout the regular season, we all know how good the Jets have been defensively.
And,
you know, they averaged, I think, around 29 shots against per game throughout the regular season.
Yep.
And they've given up 77, I think it is, over the first two. So over 40 and over 30 in the first two games they've allowed. So they're already giving a very good offensive team in Colorado more shots and chances than they have on average in the regular season. And Rick Bowness knew that. They're a good team. They're going to get their chances. How do you limit them, and how do you take away the high danger chances? That's what they have to focus on. So already in the first two games, Colorado's getting more shots on net than they average throughout the regular season. And then you look at the Connor Hellebuck numbers, and he was, in the first 10 minutes of game one, he was the difference. When Colorado was coming on and the Jets were still nervous about being in the whiteout and didn't get their feet going in the game, and then it ended up being a crazy night. But when you're right, when you look at the playoff numbers for Connor Hellebuck, he's given up three or more goals in eight of his last nine playoff starts and six straight playoff starts. So that bucks the trend of his regular season numbers. And this is where, you know, if you're Colorado, do you say, hey, we got something going again now? And that's why I think tonight's a huge game for the Winnipeg Jets.
For sure.
You're on the road now. You've got to show you've got that pushback and that bounce back. Don't give Colorado the edge here at home to take a 2-1 lead. Try and break that narrative. I think that's, you know, you look back last season in the first round, with the Jets and Vegas, they get that win in game one, but then they can't get that back. They can't get that momentum back. And the story's kind of come out the same way again. So if you're the Jets, you've got to try to break that narrative of the playoffs, that when you get into the playoffs that, you know, you don't have the pushback and you know, the goaltending isn't the same and everything. So that's why I think tonight's a really big game for the Jets. If you want to change that narrative and say, you know, we are a different team and we're a much better team, tonight is the night. You're away from the whiteout. Try to use that to your advantage to focus on locking things down the way that you know how to do, that you've done throughout the season.
One final point here on Connor Hellebuck. Now, every time, This goes back to last year. Elliot and I talked to him for the podcast. This year we talked to him for the podcast, and specifically this season, when it's, you know, halfway through and it's becoming obvious that, you know, here's your Vezina Trophy, you know, candidate, probably number one, pretty much from wire to wire, bell to bell. And, you know, Hellebuck would always go out of his way to tell us, this isn't me. I'm the same goaltender that I've always been. This isn't me. This is about the players around me, the defensemen, the forwards, commitment to defense, all of it. And one of the things, John, you know this as a goaltender. When you know where the shots are going to be coming from, it makes it easier to be a goalie. Like, I look at Vegas, and to take nothing away from Aiden Hill and now Logan Thompson, because they're playing well, and they played well, and Aiden Hill, you know, you could have made a low-key Conn Smythe Trophy argument for last season. But the way that the Vegas Golden Knights, and it's a whole team, are committed to defense, goalies know where the shots are coming from. And as a goalie, when you know where the shots are coming from, you can look real good. And you see that with Vegas. And with the Winnipeg Jets, like, I look at Hellebuck here, and the first two games, you know, less than great. But I say to myself, I don't know that that's more of a comment on Hellebuck as it is the players around him. To his own point, he's the same goaltender. Everything else around him seems to have changed a little bit. Are you picking up what I'm putting down on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and he's a battler. The one thing I love about his concept where he said the other night, I only need to make one more save than the other guy. So it's the numbers don't matter. The wins matter to him in the playoffs. So that's a good mindset to have, because you go back to game one as an example, 7-6. It doesn't matter if it was 2-1 or 7-6. There's only one stat that matters in the playoffs. You got to get the win. So for that mindset, first of all, for him to have is the right mindset to have in the playoffs. You got to battle, and you've got to do whatever it takes to get the win and not think about those numbers. Now, to your point, you're right. When you know where the shots are coming from, and your night's a lot easier. And that goes back to my point of, you know, they've given up more shots than they do. They're not sort of walked down the same defensively as they have been in the regular season. And I think part of that is Colorado making adjustments to their game on that side of the puck, too. You know, the way they've tried to jam up the front of the net a little more and, you know, get a player like Valeri Nichushkin and right in front and causing some traffic, causing a disturbance, so it's not easy. And to your point, maybe not knowing where everything is coming from. So you keep them guessing, you keep the D guessing, get some puck movement a little more in Hellebuck, because he's very good when he's in that position, the right spot all the time. But you get him moving around a lot because the defense is chasing the game, then he's forced to chase the shooter, and you end up in that position where Colorado puts themselves in more high-danger scoring chances. So, I think that's something that Colorado's adjusted to, and that's something Winnipeg needs to adjust for here in Game 3 is try and make things easier on your goaltender as well.
When you look at the most important players in a series, the goaltenders, and we've had a good swing at that pinata, you can talk about Nathan MacKinnon, and you can talk about Mark Scheifele. I'm curious from your point of view, because the answer to me for this one is Nikolaj Ehlers and Valeri Nichushkin. Outside of the obvious Nathan MacKinnon, Mark Scheifele, who are the most important players here? Like, who are the wild card players that you say, you know what, this guy could ice this game, that guy could ice this game? Who is it for you from both sides?
Yeah, on the Colorado side, I think you're right. Nichushkin's been a big factor for them. You talk about MacKinnon. It's funny to say, you know, he's got a goal and 3 points in the first two games. I don't know if MacKinnon has really been a big factor in the series yet. So to have these other players being an impact, I think it's huge. So Colorado, Nichushkin, and Arturi Lehkonen. Lehkonen's been a big-time game player for Colorado, and I think he's been a big factor so far for them in the series in the early going as well, with a couple of goals and 4 points. So, I think he can be a bit of a part of that game-breaking side of things for the Avalanche. On the Winnipeg side, and much has been talked about this already in the first two games, the top line has been good. That third line, the Lowry line, has been good. The fourth line, with Gustafson scoring, it's the second line. And that's Monahan, that's Toffoli, and Nikolaj Ehlers. And those three have been held pointless. And, you think there's already been how many goals scored throughout the series here, and they haven't got a point yet. So for them, for the Jets, if you look for a breakthrough player, Monahan and Toffoli, of course, being your trade acquisition deadline pickups too, and they have the ability to do that and experienced as well, Tyler Toffoli especially, he knows it. So for Winnipeg, I think the breakthrough on that side will come from the second line, and the second line's got to find a way to get it going. I know Rick Bonus didn't like that. He felt the first two games they were getting bunched up a little too much in the middle of the ice, wants them to spread out more. That's where their strength is, with their puck movement, when they can stretch the ice east-west a little more and find some space. So look to see if they can do that tonight. But for the Jets side of things, that second line could be the breakthrough and the difference for them if they can get going.
For sure. John, a couple more quickies here for you. When you look at this Colorado Avalanche team, you mentioned trade deadline acquisitions. How have you seen Sean Walker so far?
Yeah, I think he's been a good add for them. Sort of fitting into that mold here in the playoff style for the Avalanche. But, you know, and as I mentioned earlier, a good former Newmarket Hurricane. So, you know, he can't be all that bad. But, no, you know what? Another guy I think that's, coming off his – he had a career high season, right, with points and everything. So sure. I think you expect a little out of him to begin with. But, I think he's fit in well there. And added a little bit of an extra dynamic on their blue line, especially with the ability to jump in and join the rush, join that offensive style a little more. So, I think when you look at sort of all the adds that Colorado has made, that was a good one that made an impact on their blue line. Now, Samuel Girard.
Yes, what's the update?
I'm sorry, the morning skate, in complete transparency for you, I don't have official word if he is going to be back in the lineup for Game 3 tonight. The Avs have got off the ice here for their morning skate, and so I don't know if Bednar is talking right now or not, and the Jets are set to come on soon, but it did look like Girard was shaping up for maybe a return to the lineup tonight for Colorado. So monitor that as your show goes on today. We'll see if the news comes out to confirm that, or it might be a game time decision again. That would probably change the dynamic. Caleb Jones, I think, will be the odd man out on the blue line for Colorado. So you put him back in, and that also gives Walker a bit of a different position as well, where he'll slot in and then can probably be even more effective for Colorado so far with the way he plays.
All right, well,
and on the Winnipeg side of things, Nate Schmidt looks like he'll draw in for Logan Stanley tonight on the Winnipeg side, is the only lineup change that we know of as of now. So.
All right, we'll look for that and let you get back to work. Bartz, as always, thanks for the preview of the game and the memories of Bob Cole, and I love how you always slide in Newmarket references. It's a beautiful thing.
It sure is, and it should be a great one tonight, baby. We're looking forward to it. Oh, baby, we're looking forward to a big one.
Do it, Bartz. Get one in there. You can do it. You can slide one tribute. We'll be listening. We'll be watching. Thanks, Johnny.
All right, you bet. All the best.
There is the great John Bartlett, play-by-play voice, Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. I spent a year and a half, almost 2 years, well, pretty much 2 years, in the booth with John doing AHL Toronto Marlies games, Matt Marchese.
Yeah, and I do love when people throw out the hometown references. You have to do that every once in a while.
Sure.
We all do it.
Why not?
We all do it. But John's great. I love John.
Yeah, Bartz is good. How do you see this series right now? Because, I mean, clearly momentum is on Colorado's side here. A lot of question marks about Connor Hellebuck, which sounds stunning that we'd be sitting here saying that, considering he's going to scoop up some major goalie hardware. How do you see this one right now?
Both games have been like backwards day. It's, the Jets score all these goals, and the question we had was, will they be able to score enough? They score all these goals in game one. And then game two, it's like Connor Hellebuck allows, another four goals, and you're going, oh, hold on a second. Something doesn't.
And it's Colorado's depth that does it.
And that's right. Like, Nathan MacKinnon has 3 points in the first two games of the series.
Yeah. That's the thing that's scary for Winnipeg, though.
Yeah, he hasn't broken out yet.
You know it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, and so.
He hasn't snapped yet.
I thought Bartz's point about the second line was really good, because Toffoli and Monahan had fit in seamlessly with this group in the regular season. And the fact that they have no points through the first two games is part of, I mean, when you win game one and score seven goals, you're like, okay, whatever. It's just one game. But they're not. I always thought that those two guys together was interesting, because they're not the fleetest of foot, both of them.
Yeah.
And they're not with a burner. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder about the speed of Colorado. And that is
a fast team.
It may just be a thing where they have to make an adjustment. Like, see how tonight goes, but it may be where the team has to make an adjustment and move maybe Toffoli off that line and bring on some speed to give Monahan a little bit of a boost as well. Maybe that's Gabe Vilardi.
Are you warming up to, well, Vilardi's not a burner.
No, but
Vilardi's real strong dots down and around the net.
He's faster than those two guys.
It sounds to me like you're chumming the waters for Cole Perfetti to return to the lineup.
Again, the fact that he's not in there is just mind-blowing to me, but yes, that would certainly help that line a little bit in terms of adding a little bit of speed to it.
Quick cough. have you seen the Saving Sakic documentary?
Not yet.
Have you watched this
I
yet?
I have the screen, or I want to watch
awesome.
It.
It's awesome. Take some time and watch it this week. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Well,
it's all about the Sakic offer
sheet.
Yeah,
I remember that. I mean, I was young, but I do remember. There's so many stupid things that you remember. That's not stupid, but yeah. You remember things, like, for whatever, it sticks in your mind. And I was pretty convinced at the time that Joe Sakic was not going to be a member of the Colorado Avalanche. And as the documentary lays out, it was pretty close.
It was totally close.
And how that franchise changes...
If there's no Joe Sakic. Oh, it's completely different. And by the way...
And maybe how the Rangers franchise changes as well.
If they get Joe Sakic, they might win more Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
Because that's when Mark Messier... Close your ears, Vancouver Canucks fans. I know you don't like hearing this, and I get it. That's when Messier peaced out of New York and went to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And they're like, our superstar, we need to replace him with, oh, yeah, that guy on Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Sakic.
And that was an offer sheet. Who was the... Fedorov had an offer sheet as well.
They've never forgiven him, and it's gross.
Who?
Detroit.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean...
Like if you look around at... Because there's always sort of outstanding numbers that should be retired by teams.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. It's one of the greatest Russian players of all time.
Players of that generation.
Yeah. The Hart Trophy, the Selke Trophy.
When you look at those big three, mm-hmm. What a line that was, the juniors too, that came over. Pavel Bure, Alexander Mogilny, and Sergei Fedorov.
Yeah.
As far as complete players go.
Oh, Fedorov.
Who was the best?
Fedorov was a complete player, miles ahead. He's a Selke Trophy winner. Pavel Bure didn't see his own end.
And he played defense on the power play long before it was in vogue.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they ever forgave him.
And he wore those wonderful white Nike skates.
Oh. Would you wear those at Men's League?
You'd
be a target.
I wore white 9K Reeboks in junior.
Did you really?
I sure did.
Oh, man. I'd be shooting at your feet so hard.
No.
You ever get a broken foot? No one ever shoot at your skates?
I've never broken a foot.
Do you ever wear white gloves? We ever that Men's League hockey guy?
No.
Because that's a target.
I didn't.
That's a target for
our Men's League, there's no targets. In some of the Men's Leagues I've played in, you're a target just by being on the ice because they still think the scouts are in the stands.
One of my favorite...
Contracts in hand.
Some of my favorite Instagram follows are Beer League Heroes.
Oh.
Where guys just wrecking each other for the dumbest reasons in front of nobody.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many times it's like the guy with the white gloves? The guy with the white skates.
It's that or the guy who got the pro stock equipment, the pro stock helmet, the pro stock gloves or pants or whatever. Or they have a buddy who played in the NHL, AHL, whatever. I've seen plenty
got
of
all
that.
The pro return gloves and everything.
So funny story about that. And I don't know if this is true. I could find out. I don't know the guy's name. There is a guy who plays in the Men's League that I play in that has told... the players on his team, or at least he has all of the gear from a certain OHL team. One that someone that has worked on this show would know who this person was if they actually existed. This player has Owen Sound Attack gear.
Does his name rhyme with Sam McKee?
No, it's not. But I asked the guy who plays on the team, I said, what's his name? He says, I'll find out. And I'm like, they played last week together and he doesn't know his name. But he's like, I'm not sure that this guy played in the OHL. So it's one of those, like, he has the gear, but I'm not sure.
The best is if you have, like, the OHL hockey bag. Like, ooh, that guy played for the Jennies.
Yeah.
Ooh, that guy played for the Frauds.
Yeah, and it's his buddy's bag.
Yeah.
I have a buddy of mine. We both went to Chikunimi's camp and we were supposed to give the jerseys back that we had for
Block
for
to
camp.
Keep it?
I didn't. I was dumb. I should have kept
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I was dumb. My buddy took his.
Good.
He still has
Smart.
It. I'm like, yeah.
Good for him.
I was too honest. That was the problem. I was too honest. Now that is a barn. You talk about barns. You've probably been there.
Oh, the George Vezina?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Unbelievable.
One of the oldest. And then, listen, Chikudimi Cucumber, George Vezina, legendary rink. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were told the ratio of male to female in that town was 1-3. And it was very noticeable at camp.
A lot of dudes?
No, the other way.
Other way around?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I almost got caught too many men on the ice at the start of the game. Because I was stretching. I was looking up in the stands and I dropped the puck. I went, oh boy.
You're still on the ice doing stretch?
Still on the ice.
You donkey.
I was 17 years old.
The worst. That was the worst.
That's a better claim to fame than the Sam Gagner story.
Would I have hated you if I played against you? Would I have hated you if
I
played against
you? Yeah, because I had a big mouth.
You did, eh?
Oh, boy. Referees.
You can't anymore. Now that gets all shut down at every level of hockey.
Yeah. Jeff, I would have been suspended for life with some of the things that I said. Cannot be repeated on the air. There was a guy who was a little bit.
You know what? You know what time it is? Like, this is Stanley Cup playoffs. One of the great things, and you only find out about this years and years later.
Of course, yeah.
I don't know if they still do it. I asked Weidman the other day when he was on. He kind of danced around it. What teams will do, I don't know if you guys ever did this in playoffs, every player will be assigned another player on the other team. And it's your job to call around to ex-teammates and get as many stories on that player as possible. Essentially, get all the dirt on that player. So when you play, you know what you can really hammer them with the chirps. Now, I was always told the worst series for that was a 2010 Stanley Cup final, Chicago and Philadelphia, that it was vicious. Glenn Healy would always talk about this. And Glenn was in between the benches. And I'm like, how bad was it, Glenn? He's like, I had that finger on the mute button like the entire game. He said it was vicious.
Yeah, I believe it. But we didn't have that.
There is, like, I've always wondered, I don't know if you do this too. I sort of, you know, go through every player in the NHL by the time their career is over and say, who's got the most interesting stories for a book? Who should write a book? Like, the superstars, obviously. But like,
who should write
a book? Exactly. You know what I'd be curious about? Hand away an idea here. Do a book on homework, hockey homework against players.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to name names because that can get you in lawsuits. But the hockey homework, peeling off another player from the other team and finding out everything about them and them doing the same thing to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
You know who will tell us about it? You know who I bet would come clean and tell us about it?
Colby Armstrong.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
It's funny because I just saw a tweet with Colby in it. That's why I thought, I was like, oh, I think Colby would definitely
would
do it.
Colby would totally do it. I wonder who he had homework for. Anyhow.
It's good though. I mean, it's good. It's part of the gamesmanship. Man, like if you can just, if that's all it takes to get somebody off of their game and the pursuit of the Stanley Cup, what did you say? What did you say the other day? If you could lie about something to win the Stanley Cup?
Oh yeah. Ask any general manager.
They would do it.
Would you lie to win the cup? Of course.
Yeah. So if you're not doing everything that you can to win, I mean, there is a certain line that will be crossed.
Yeah.
But if you win a Stanley Cup, your name's on there forever.
You know who else I'd be interested in for homework? Bieksa. Because I could see Kevin being just ruthless.
Well, and those Chicago-Vancouver series, too.
Oh.
Boy, yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, think about who's on that Chicago team, too, right? Like, Versteeg and Kane. Like
Buff.
Nasty. Buff. I miss Buff. I miss Buff.
There is an Instagram account. I think it's like 1929 Hockey. And they
posted, it's good. I love it.
They posted something about Buff for his birthday, and it was just like, when he was playing, and even though it wasn't that long ago, the game has changed so much even since he's been out of the league.
Yeah.
Could you imagine him today? He'd be a $10 million player.
What I've always believed about Bufflin was if he said to himself, I'm going to take 10 years and get in amazing shape, and because he could do everything. Great skater, great shot, heavy, big body checker, like all.
He's a monster.
I still don't know how Mark Stone
is
sharing oxygen with us after that hit.
Yeah.
In that Winnipeg Ottawa game.
Yeah.
That was like the loudest hit I've ever, the crack. You can find that one on YouTube. Mark Stone and Dustin Bufflin. Oof. I don't know how Mark Stone skated away from that hit. But the thing about Bufflin was like if he took like 10 years and just chiseled and just worked on it. Because he was really good at hockey. He could have been great at hockey. Like he won cups, made a ton of dough, and he's a full-time, you know, he fishes now. And he's
living his best life.
He's living a great life. That's what he wants. Stepdad played in the WHA. But if he only had, like, you look at guys and you say, okay, take 10 years and just hockey. Would have made so much money. Winnipeg probably would have won Stanley Cups. Right? Because two things had to happen for Winnipeg to win Stanley Cups. Keep Buffalo in the lineup and keep Ryan Little happy.
Yeah.
And healthy. Those are the
and those are very things and those are very hard.
But did you not get that feeling about Byfuglien?
100%.
Winnipeg still had Byfuglien.
Today's game, he is one of the most impactful players in the game because there's nobody in the league, and there are great players. There is nobody as big who could skate as fast and play that physical. He would make Tom Wilson is a beast. He's actually played really well in these playoffs.
He has. Penalty kill too.
He would make Tom Wilson look like a fly.
Yeah.
Just whatever. Get out of my way. That's how big and nasty Byfuglien was.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. I do miss him in the NHL. The scariest thing about him when you're talking about him being in shape, like he would play regularly at like 280.
Oh yeah.
Like that's a monster.
Like it ain't no thing.
That is like a defensive.
But not like, it's not like 280 and you're lighting matches off of him.
No.
He's not like torn up like a bad report card. It's like 280.
Yeah, but that tells you at that, like think about how fast he could go at 280.
I know.
That's a freight train.
You took like 10 years and said, I'm going for it. And I'm just playing hockey and I'm hanging out at the gym. Like that's it. Hockey, next 10 years.
Is he the player that is like the most kind of interesting to you of like the last 15 years in terms of, you know, how he left and what he's done since and just the
going
mystique
away.
Around him. And
yes.
He would be a fantastic, Dustin, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the program.
He's not listening to it.
I know he's not, but maybe there's some people that maybe they listen.
I didn't think
Dick Irvin watched the show. He was watching yesterday.
Listen, guys like Dick and Scotty Bowman, watch
everything.
Listen everything.
Oh, Scotty and the technology. Well, he's the first coach that really, you know, used technology to his advantage, right? He was using email before anybody else was.
When was the last time we had Scotty? I would love to talk to Scotty.
Get
Scotty.
Just let me give him, I'll just give him a call.
Show prep here during the live show.
People love Scotty. So.
And the great stories. Great stories.
By the way, Dick Irvin, when we reached out to him yesterday, he was wheeling his recycling bins out. And that's why he missed my call originally.
The guy sharp as a tack, 92.
And I was like, I'm 35. I don't even want to take my recycling bins out. It's 92.
All right, let's hit a break. Four games on the go around the NHL tonight and four over the day tomorrow on all of these series in a couple of moments as the Merrick Show returns to Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on 360, wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a flash.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program alongside Matt Marchese, and we have some news. Maddie, what you got?
I didn't check the microphone before I sat down. There was a giant here before, apparently.
Who was there?
Sitting here.
Was Barker there before?
Maybe.
He's big.
Yeah.
Large man.
Kevin's big. Okay, so from the Leafs.
Okay.
Sheldon Keefe said that they will make a call on William Nylander tomorrow. And this is from Luke Fox, by the way.
Okay.
Leafs will make a call on Nylander tomorrow. All signs point to yes. Daddy Lyubushkin. That's going to be his new nickname. It's not the Russian Baron, but Daddy Lyubushkin.
Daddy Lyubushkin, okay.
Is already en route back to Toronto from California and will be available to play. Pencil in TJ Brody for his series debut. Mm. Matthews getting his energy back after illness. So that was what Elliot was referring to.
Okay.
A little bit under the weather. William Nylander, when asked about what was ailing him and kept him out of the first three games of the series, says it's personal. Is there anything else you would like to talk about? Basically, is
the answer is no. We want you to talk about that a little bit more.
But this is my
when did it happen? What was the hit?
Yeah.
You couldn't find it on video again. Game 82 against Tampa.
Yeah, here's my favorite though.
Okay,
again from Luke Fox. William Nylander on the biggest challenge jumping into a series that's already in full swing. Nothing. William Nylander 3 points tomorrow night. Take it to the bank.
It's a pretty chill guy.
And Ilya Samsonov is going to start. Presumed starter.
I've always been amazed at how he's able to tune out noise in Toronto.
Oh.
And a lot of players,
especially riding the subway,
been able to, that's a great spot, have not been able to tune out noise. And it's really gobbled them up.
Yeah.
Like for how long? And finally, the story, like the narrative sort of changed around Nylander. Even like longtime Nylander haters have had to sheepishly admit that he's more of a physical player than they cared to admit,
mm-hmm.
and effective player as well. But I've always been amazed at how none of that gobbled him up early on.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know where it comes from. Does it come from him being a second generation player?
His dad played in New York.
His dad did play in New York. And his dad was a very determined player on the ice and didn't believe in leaving a nickel on the table off the ice.
And good for him.
But I always wonder sort of where that comes from, because even like, remember as a young player, like that was Brendan Shanahan's first pick.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been the Philadelphia draft. That would have been the Aaron Ekblad draft. And that's when Brendan Shanahan told the scouts in Toronto, we need to stop picking safe. Because for the longest time in Toronto, you asked the scouts, the feeling was, in order to protect your job, just get someone that you know will play in the NHL. Doesn't matter how much of an impact they have. Doesn't matter how long they play. Doesn't matter what they do. You just want to protect your job and make sure that your guy made it to the NHL. Like, they were a very, very conservative
bunch of people
at the draft.
Yeah.
And what Shanahan said and told all the scouts, and the first test was that year at the draft, he said, we need to swing for some fences here. He said, if we're gonna start to turn this thing around and we're going to be great, we need to swing for the fences. Some of them may be misses. But, you know, call up Nylander's draft. Call up the Philadelphia draft. Go to the whether it's HockeyDB you use or whatever. Like, look at some of the players around him. I think there was a lot of people screaming for Lawson Crouse.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
He was playing with the Kings and Frontenacs. You know, big, strong. Lawson Crouse turned into a fantastic player for the Arizona.
Nick Ritchie have been another one of those?
Nick Ritchie would have been another one that a lot of people would have been screaming for.
Wait, Crouse was?
Where did Crouse go? Was he available at that point, or was he already gone?
No, Crouse wasn't that year.
Oh, I'm thinking of Nick Ritchie then.
Yeah, it was Nick Ritchie that you were thinking.
So Nick Ritchie. So there was him. Who else was around Nylander?
Kevin Fiala was there. That wouldn't have been more of a safe pick, though.
Things did not work out great for Kevin Fiala in Nashville. I remember when I was doing Hockey Night in Canada radio talk, we had Shea Weber and Ryan Suter in, and one of the two, I won't say who, said to me, do you know anything about this Fiala kid? And I'm like, yeah, I sort of read the rap sheet. I'm like, how's he doing? And they're like, he's pretty confident, which is always hockey player for Carney for it. This kid's really cocky and we want him out of the room.
Yeah, well.
I don't think he lasted very long in that first training camp.
No, he's a pretty good player, though. the confidence has spilled over.
He's not shy about butting heads. He did in Nashville. He did certainly in Minnesota with Dean Evason.
Yeah, would Dylan Larkin have been in that conversation? He went 15 that
Dylan
year.
Dylan Larkin was there. That, you know,
Brendan Perlini would have been another one that the Leafs probably would have been linked to.
Okay, Dylan Larkin. Drafted, was it 15th?
15, yeah.
15th overall by the Detroit Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something that I want you to think about.
Yep.
So Dylan Larkin, at that point, is going to Michigan.
Yep.
The Detroit Red Wings draft him. There's no way that they're not going to send him back to Michigan. The Detroit Red Wings. But, and I've asked McDavid about this and how hard he tried. His rights in the OHL were held by the Erie Otters.
Wow.
And I remember asking McDavid, did you try? He's like, oh, man, we worked on it so hard. I would always talk to Larkin about, come on to Erie, leave Michigan. Could you imagine the damage?
Would Dylan Strome have been there, too, on that Erie team?
Was that the year that Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome were on the team?
That's a pretty good
Connor
one.
Connor Brown.
Yeah, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch up the middle, isn't it?
Got Dylan Larkin and Connor McDavid up the gut in junior hockey.
And Dylan Strome is just kind of there.
Alex DeBrincat snapping in 65 goal, casual goals.
I remember when somebody told me that Alex DeBrincat was too small to score goals in the NHL, and I laughed at them. I said, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I understand it because there have been players that are too small to play that just lit it up in junior. We think of players like Corey Locke. If you watch Corey Locke play in junior hockey,
you know what?
Did you not think?
I'm not laughing at Corey Locke, by the way.
Smokes.
I remember Ottawa 67.
This guy is going to light up.
Yeah.
No. Godin with Windsor. Nope.
And
Tyler Biggs, nope.
And Corey Locke has been a comparable
Biggs,
for
Donnie Biggs, not Tyler. Donnie Biggs.
Corey Locke has been a comparable for a lot of NHLers. Some that have gone on to be like have a career like that, and some that have gone on to be better.
The thing about Alex DeBrincat And it was a legitimate question. I remember at the draft, is he going to have enough space to get that shot off? Is he going to have enough space? Because in the OHL, he got more time, obviously, in the NHL.
Yeah.
Does he have enough time? And it turns out the answer is yes.
Yeah. That was that draft that you were talking about, the 2014 draft, it's a really good draft. Really good draft.
Look at the top of it.
Who goes one? Leon goes one. Who goes two? You got Ekblad.
Isn't that Braden Point?
Draisaitl.
Isn't Braden Point there? Braden Point in that draft? I think Braden Point was in that draft.
Yeah, David Pastrnak was in that draft too.
That year was interesting because of all the Europeans, and Pastrnak was injured for part of the year, if my memory serves correctly. The big debate was who's going to be the better player, Jacob Vrana or David Pastrnak? And Vrana went early.
Vrana went the Caps. Eight picks before, I think.
Yeah, and then the Boston Bruins grabbed Pastrnak. Yeah.
So that the top five scorers from that draft, or six scorers, let's go six.
Yeah.
Let's go eight. It's better. Draisaitl, Pastrnak, Point, Reinhart, Nylander, Larkin, Ehlers, Fiala.
It's a good draft.
Jeez, that's good.
So a few things there.
And Adrian Kempe and Jared McCann are a little bit further down that list.
Not too shabby.
Wow. We may look at that draft and say that may be one of the...
Sneaky best?
One of the better drafts. Maybe not. It's not going to be the best, mm-hmm. but it's going to be pretty darn good. Like Alex Tuck in there, Brandon Montour, Jared McCann, Nick Schmaltz, Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah. I got a few stories about a few of these players.
Sure.
So there was a team in the NHL who, at the draft, the Philadelphia draft, the Western scouts were begging their general manager to take. But someone in the organization had everybody believing that if you were going to succeed in the NHL, you had to have a good force plate result at the combine.
Now explain to the people what the force plate is
essentially the jumping exercise and landing hard.
It's a lot of jumping that you do in the NHL.
Force plate. That there was a correlation between the force plate and success in the NHL.
Oh my God.
So this team passed over Braden Point because of his force plate results. Yeah. What were some of the other names there? I got to throw a couple of stories out there. Why not? It's a Friday afternoon. We'll just throw around a couple of hockey stories. But for the force plate one is still one that I just...
Sam Reinhart would have been there. I mean, we did Dylan Larkin and Fiala. Victor Arvidsson was in that conversation. Jared McCann. You got an Adrian Kempe story?
Just that he was super fast and for the longest time with the Los Angeles Kings. Like, he was that transition player with L.A. Adrian Kempe, it's funny too, because I mentioned Shanahan with grabbing William Nylander. That was the beginning of the sea change for the Los Angeles Kings. Mm. And that was, we're too slow, we need to get faster. And that was the first pick that started to make that happen. Because the Los Angeles Kings, even when they won their Stanley Cups, they were kind of like the St. Louis Blues when they won their cup. Slowest team in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were a straight line table hockey team. Possession monsters, but also get your face up against the glass. But, like, there were not fast players. That's why I remember when Los Angeles grabbed Marian Gaborik, and he really stood out, like, whoa.
and he wasn't even at the beginning of his career when he went there either.
But LA grabs Gaborik, and we're all like, holy smokes, man. Gaborik found
he's
a gear.
He's still fast.
Everybody around him is just that slow. Adrian Kempe was the beginning of that for the Los Angeles Kings, getting faster.
That goal that he scored the other night, the second goal against Stuart Skinner, I don't think people understand how difficult that goal is. He almost did not know where the puck was, and it kind of just ended up in front of him, and he bats it out of midair into the net. Like, that's super impressive. I love Adrian Kempe.
Do you remember the knock on Leon Draisaitl at that draft?
Was it his boots?
Yes, too heavy. Heavy boots, slow skater, will never play in the NHL.
Okay, so I'm not going to try and be hot takey on Leon Draisaitl. It's more just a curiosity more than anything.
Okay.
I'm really curious to see... I mean, whatever happens, maybe he stays with Edmonton and we never find this out. Yeah. I would really love to see Leon Draisaitl without Connor McDavid. Just as a curiosity.
At the Vancouver draft, which would have been the Jack Hughes draft, the scuttlebutt on day one. The scuttlebutt on day one, because that was a year that the Tampa Bay Lightning went out against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yep.
And everyone in Tampa was livid.
Oh, yes. I remember this. Yes,
scuttlebutt on the floor that day, there were two. One of them was James Neal from Milan Lucic, which, to my face, one side completely denied and said, why are you making this up?
Oops.
Again. No. That's okay. Like, there are certain times of the year you know people are going to lie to you. It's okay. It's baked into the pie. And the other one was a deal that involved Kucherov and Dreisaitl as the primaries. Now, I don't know if Edmonton also asked for an Anthony Cirelli or something like that, and that scotched the whole thing. But there were conversations about Nikita Kucherov and Leon Dreisaitl.
So
how does history difference if that happened? Because don't forget, Edmonton wanted someone to play wing with Connor McDavid.
Oh my God,
Kucherov and McDavid.
Well, who shoots first though? That's what I want to know. They both had 100 assists this year. Yeah, who shoots first?
Keep passing the puck back. Will someone please shoot this thing? Someone please.
So now on that, that's really interesting that you say that. Yep. How would hockey history change?
Yep.
Could you imagine a grumpier Nikita Kucherov having to be in cold Edmonton instead of warm Florida?
Give it to me. I love it.
Of course.
All day long. I love grumpy people.
But he would be super grumpy. You think Leon Dreisaitl is pissy, then...
I love Dreisaitl. He's one of my favorite people to deal with.
He's very German.
He is one of my favorite people... completely favorite people to deal with.
You've interviewed him a bunch of times.
100%. And if you ask him a question, he'll give you a thoughtful answer. Like, there's nothing frivolous. Like, he doesn't suffer fools gladly. Like, I will give that to Leon Dreisaitl. He does not put up with someone. He doesn't put up with BS. He doesn't. And we've seen him get snippy at reporters before, and I get it.
Sure.
But
it's a long season.
To me, I think Dreisaitl is one of the most interesting players in the NHL. And his father, Peter, is a legend in German hockey. It's funny, too. We're talking about San Jose. Here I go. Talking about San Jose again. We're talking about San Jose Sharks in the first hour, and I was wondering about Marco Sturm. Could that be the next head coach of the San Jose Sharks? When they were looking for their general manager, I heard that there was one candidate from Europe, and I had wondered if it was Leon Dreisaitl's dad.
It would be one way to try and sway Leon to go to San Jose.
Well, we'll see. The Dreisaitl conversation will be interesting. Like, whenever Edmonton, and who knows, like, hopefully for them, they win the Stanley Cup, and it pushes this conversation into late June. But at some point, like, he's available to extend on July 1st.
Yeah. Well, they're going to have to make a decision on that. Because you talked about the thoughtful answers he gives.
Are we doing draft stuff more? I love these draft stories.
No, we just don't have enough time for that. We only have about 2 minutes, but I wanted to ask, you can close your computer.
I'll close my computer.
There are a lot of thoughtful coaches. I think of Paul Maurice. I think of John Cooper. Those are the two kind of at the top of my list. Who's the most thoughtful player in the league for you right now? Because we don't get a lot. Like, when you and Elliot do those interviews, those sit-downs, that's a different type of interview than they normally do. Is there someone that stands out to you that you've spoken with over the last few years or whatever that you would say is the most thoughtful or at least or insightful?
I'm going to give you a name from the American Hockey League.
Okay.
Connor Carrick.
Got the podcast.
I've always said this about Connor Carrick. He's too smart for hockey. He's just way flat out too smart for hockey.
Yeah.
Really good player, real good defenseman, way too smart for hockey. Interested in things philosophical and scientific off of the ice. Like, you're not going to have a baseball hat conversation with Connor Carrick. You can, and he's happy to have it. But of all the people that we've talked to, I will say Connor Carrick is probably the most insightful and smartest. Does that surprise you?
No, because
Crosby's there too, by the way.
Yeah, he would be. Yeah. Sometimes you just don't get that side, right? You guys have that opportunity where you can get a different look.
Smart guy.
Yeah, that's great.
Too smart for hockey. Thankfully, I'm not too smart for hockey.
That's why we keep our jobs, because we're not too smart for hockey.
I think that was offside, Maddie. Oh, come on. That's icing.
What a week.
Thanks to everyone who took part in today's program. John Bartlett from the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. Jason Greger from the aforementioned Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. Elliot Friedman, who kicked it off. Everyone behind the glass, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick, and, of course, Matt Marchese. And take some time this weekend and think about and watch and listen to some of our favorite Bob Cole clips. I'm sure he'll be all over Hockey Night in Canada, as he should be. Again, when a giant tree falls, there is no obvious replacement. Take some time and think about Bob Cole.